Hi, it's Elena.
And it's Candace.
And you're listening to Cousins on Crime. Yes, Sam is here with us.
And you're listening to Clicking on Crime. There's a lot going on today.
Oh. Okay, maybe we got it quiet in here.
How are you, Lena?
I'm good. Thank you for meeting with me.
Thank you for having me over. Yeah. I know I kind of invited myself, but...
Well, you're welcome anytime.
I know.
You're just lucky that I cleaned my house.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean...
You're lucky I took for a shower the most part. Today, so we're clean all the way around. Yeah. So Lena and I were just talking, mm-hmm. and there's just a lot going on in life, you know, these days. And so we kind of thought maybe of taking a little tiny break, just a couple of weeks.
Yeah. Can y'all just hold on to your panties? All right?
We just, you know, we got some stuff going on in the fam, and we... I have some babies that need operating on. And my first, we're not doing them at the same time, but my first one will go this month to have hip surgery. And so, you know, there's just a lot going on. And this podcast is really great for detaching from what's going on in our lives, I guess. Like we get to research and write and kind of
focus on something else.
Yeah, exactly. And we'll still do that. We'll still be writing and stuff. But it will be nice to just have kind of one deadline off of our plates.
Yes.
For just a couple of weeks. But what you should do though is follow our show wherever you listen, mm-hmm. whether it's Spotify or Apple Music or Apple Podcasts, and it'll just, we'll be back in like 2 weeks. And follow us on Instagram.
Yes.
Cousins on Crime Podcast. We'll post updates there too.
Yeah. And we'll say hi to y'all just so that.
Yeah. We'll say hi and we'll be like, oh, you know what? We actually need one more week. Maybe. Hopefully not. But thanks for giving us some grace during this time.
Bearing with us.
Yes. We love doing this show for you and we just need a minute.
Yeah.
A minute. But yeah, so.
Yeah, we'll be recuperated and ready to go.
Yeah, we'll be so fresh.
Yeah. Maybe during that time we can kind of take a hot yoga class and unwind.
I need to stretch out. Unwind. Yeah, unwind.
Yeah.
It's a word. A word now.
Yeah, so maybe we can do that.
Unwind is like serious unwinding.
Right. If you didn't know.
We need to unwind.
That sounds fun, right?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah.
Well, what you got for us?
Well, first of all, I really have to kind of put a plug in about something.
Plug.
Have you ever heard of the movie The Ark and the Darkness? It's new.
No, I have not.
Okay, so it's new. It's in theaters now. I don't know how long it's going to be there. It's set up like a documentary. Chris and I went to go watch it with some friends last night, and that's why I'm talking about it. But it talks about Noah's Ark and the global flood.
Ooh.
And I know a lot of people look at Bible stories and they're like, they look at it as some mystical, mythical.
Yeah.
Story.
Yeah.
But these experts in the film corroborate the biblical story and with scripture and scientific findings. Mm-hmm. And so it's very thought provoking and very interesting to listen to, even if you're not a believer.
I would love to watch that because I watched a documentary called Genesis one time.
Okay.
And it was like all scientists that were talking about. Like they did talk about the flood and stuff and great rock formations.
Yes.
And they were like, this proves, you know, that there was a great flood and stuff like that. So I would love to watch that. That sounds interesting.
Yeah. So even if you're not a believer in Christ or the Bible, it makes you think, and it gives a new light on our history and where the world came from. And anyway,
yeah,
it's pretty cool.
Yeah. A new perspective.
Yeah. And just because I wanted to throw that out there, just because every week we talk about all these cases that have like evil things happening. Mm-hmm. And I believe that in the world today, we just have a battle of good and evil.
We're going through it right now.
Yeah.
We know that all too well.
Yeah. It's more than ever. And so I just want to be on the good side of things. Mm-hmm. And the more we know, the more we grow. So,
right. The more you know.
Yeah.
Bring. You know that. What was it? Reading Rainbow?
Oh, yeah.
Or something. The star that shoots across with the rainbow. The more you know.
Yeah.
Yeah. The more you know.
So, yeah, I just encourage you to go watch The Ark and the Darkness and let me know what you think about it.
Yeah, let us know. And especially if you're a non-believer.
Yes.
Because I love having conversations. Like,
yeah,
my faith has teetered for many, many years, but I love having open conversations with people because I'm very science-based.
Right.
Like, I really love science. I went to a liberal arts college where they, you know, taught evolution, the ugly word that Christians don't like. But I love hearing other people's perspectives too. So
right.
And I would be.
Yeah. I love the biblical stance and I love scientific facts. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
This has both. So yeah, let's talk
Tuesday about it.
Exactly.
It's Taco Tuesday.
I'm glad you caught that.
That's funny.
Okay. So
thanks for telling us about that.
Yeah. On to the case. Mm-hmm. This case was brought to my attention by my friend Tara.
Hey, Tara.
This case was kind of close to her through friends of friends. So thank you, Tara, for the suggestion. So on November 26th of 1983, Donna and Steve Koenig had a beautiful baby girl. They named her Emily Rebecca Koenig. She grew up in a suburb close to Dallas, Texas. She grew up, she got married to a man named Donovan Lambert and became an elementary school teacher. She is described as loving and nurturing and really an all-around girl. She was girly and loves to do makeup, and then she would turn around and play softball and get down and dirty.
Oh, cool.
That's my kind of girl.
Yeah, and you have to be that kind of girl to wrangle some elementary kids.
Yeah. For sure.
Thank you to all of our teachers.
Yes. So there's even a picture of her changing the oil in her car and fixing her brake pads.
I love it.
While wearing her mini skirt.
I have a picture similar. I'm not kidding.
Really?
Yes.
I need to see this.
I'm in like this really tight short dress. Okay. We got a flat tire on the way to the club. And so we had to pull over. And serious, I'll post it on our
cool.
Instagram.
I'd love to see it.
I'll
I don't
show
think
you
I've
first.
Yeah. I'd be like, Candace, don't.
This guy helped us, but like I was down in there getting black hands.
Oh,
so.
No.
Yeah.
Not good for a night out.
I know.
So her favorite color was green, just like
Emily.
You.
We would have been such good friends.
I can see that. She had a few tattoos, one being a four-leaf clover. Green four-leaf clover, and it said Lucky 23, and that represented the number she wore on her jersey.
Cool.
Her and her husband had two daughters together. Unfortunately, the marriage did not last, but the two of them did remain friends and were doing a great job at co-parenting.
I love to hear it.
I know. She even posted on social media a post thanking him for the kind of dad he was. I thought
just
that was.
I love it.
I know.
I love when people can, you know, have healthy co-parenting relationships.
Yeah.
I have a lot of friends who have really great co-parenting relationships. And yeah. It's just, it's heartwarming.
It really is. But jumping to the end of 2013, Emily was divorced and she was ready to start dating again. She added a guy named Robert Early on Facebook. I think it was one of those things where they had mutual friends in common. Mm-hmm. And that's how they connected.
Well, they like every time you log into Facebook, it's like people you may know.
Yeah.
Add me. So, yeah. You're like, they kind of look familiar. So,
yeah, let's be friends. Totally. Oh, he's kind of cute.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I don't know. So Emily and Robert had grown up in the same area. They had gone to the same high school. Robert was about 3 years older than her, so they didn't really know each other.
Mm-hmm. But they probably saw each other, like at the watering hole.
Maybe.
Is that what the kids call it these days?
Anyway, they decided to meet up at a bonfire party, and they really hit it off. March of 2014, about 4 months of dating, Robert was living in Carlsbad, New Mexico. He was doing work on an oil rig.
Oh, okay.
Emily decided to go to Carlsbad to see Robert and spend the weekend there.
Fun times.
Yeah, road trip. She called her parents on Saturday just to check in, and she was having fun. She seemed really happy. Well, Emily's mom, she talks about how the next morning, that Sunday, March 2nd, just after she got out of church, she got a text from Robert. It said, "This is Robert. Call me."
I don't like that at all.
No.
And I bet her mother didn't either.
She didn't. She's like, okay, I'm calling him now. So she called him as soon as she read the message, and he told her that Emily was missing.
What?
Yeah. How can you go from having fun?
I know.
It's a great weekend to, oh, she's missing. Her parents, along with her two young daughters that her parents were watching for Emily, immediately loaded up the car and headed to New Mexico.
I'll say.
Yeah. They were going to go find her. I mean, can you imagine what's going through their minds? This trip is a little over 7 hours of driving. And
I always think about stuff like that.
Yeah. Like, what's going through their minds?
They have 7 hours to be like,
yeah, replaying. Like,
what do you think they're doing? Maybe on the phone the whole entire time? Calling people?
Yeah, maybe.
And like trying to piece things together?
Maybe. I mean, yeah, their mind's racing. They thought things like, someone has her and is holding her hostage, or maybe one of the cartel gangs has her. Ooh. Because the cartel is...
I didn't think of that, but yeah.
It's kind of prevalent in that area. So news traveled fast. I'm assuming the calls that you talked about, maybe her parents were calling people. Mm-hmm. So friends and family were doing their part by posting on social media and calling businesses in Carlsbad, asking them to post pictures in their windows of Emily to get the word out and, you know, be on the lookout for Emily. That morning, Robert also called the police and reported that Emily was missing. His words to the dispatcher were, "My girlfriend left last night, and she hasn't made it back to the hotel." Okay. He continued saying, "I talked to her parents and ex-husband, and nobody's heard from her." And he says, "She was pretty intoxicated." The detectives talked about how this was a high crime area. This is a huge area for the oil and gas fields. And the men that they hire don't get background checks. And some of them have criminal history.
Yeah. Well, the big oil rig tycoons probably don't care much about where they've been, what they've been up
just
to.
Make me my money.
Exactly.
I'm sure there's great people that work for the oil field, but so they're thinking, was she kidnapped? Is she hurt somewhere and can't get away?
And they're probably in and out of town frequently. There's probably like a lot of turnover too.
Yeah, you're right. Now let me tell you about the detectives that worked on her case.
Go on.
Because, you know, if you ever need them to investigate a case for you, these are the men that you want.
Okay. I thought you were going to say quite the opposite.
No, ma'am.
It's good to hear we've got some ball busters and some boots to the ground type of guys. Yes,
they are in Carlsbad, New Mexico.
Okay, well, if I ever go missing, I hope I go missing there.
And I don't know if they are still there. They were back in 2014. So, but I'll tell you their names. Detectives are Lieutenant John Blackman, Sergeant Blaine Rennie.
Shout out.
Sergeant Scott Naylor. And Detective Alan Sanchez.
Okay.
These men put their heart and dedication into this investigation. The first thing that detectives did, they went to the Stevens Inn where Robert and Emily were staying, and they pulled surveillance video, and then they went to room 402 to talk to Robert.
Okay.
He was very cooperative. What they did notice was that Emily's cell phone was in the hotel room. Her car was still parked there, mm-hmm. and her purse was in the front passenger seat.
None of that sounds good.
Emily's parents and daughters arrived to the police station and told Detective Rennie everything that they knew about her. And so he felt like now it's personal. He knows who she is.
Yeah.
Detective Rennie was invested and he wasn't going to sleep until he found Emily. Aww. He gave her daughters a little stuffed animal to try to make them feel
so
better.
Sweet.
I know. The younger daughter looked at him and said, "My mommy is just lost and you're going to bring her home, right?"
Oh my gosh, crush my soul.
I know. And he assured her that he was going to do his very best to bring her home.
Aww. I bet it really makes it so real for detectives when they sit face to face with family, especially the children.
Oh, yeah.
And they're like, they need their mother.
Yeah. Yeah. So now it's like on to the next level of, you know, we got to find her.
Yeah.
So Robert comes to the station on March 3rd and tells them about their relationship. They had been dating for about 4 months, and they have even met each other's family. He tells them of the events of their time together since Emily arrived in Carlsbad. They went through the Carlsbad Caverns. They went to Roswell. On Saturday evening, they went to eat at a place called Tijuana's. They had a couple of margaritas. Then they went to a place called Farley's. Then they ended the night at the hotel bar called Blue Cactus Lounge.
Oh.
She took pictures of each adventure.
Sounds like a fun trip.
Yeah.
Why did it have to come to this?
Well, we will learn this. A witness at the bar tells about how the bar was pretty packed. It's one of the only bars in the area, in this desert area. So it was pretty packed. But he did remember seeing the two of them. They were playing pool and they were hugging and they were kissing. When she would take her turn on the pool table and she would have to bend over to take her mm-hmm. shot, Robert would step behind Emily to cover her from her short skirt.
Oh.
So it was obvious that he didn't want anyone seeing what they should not be seeing.
Right. Okay. I was going to say gentleman, but maybe possessive instead.
Yeah. you make the assumption. So Robert did talk about this during the interview. He says at one point, Emily had walked away. And when she came back to the pool table, she told him that a guy was hitting on her.
Uh-oh.
She walks up to Robert and says, "He told me, if he's not taking care of you, I'll take you home."
Boo!
And so Robert says, I told her, "Whatever, Emily. If that's what you want to do, go ahead and go."
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
So she basically says, "Forget you. I'm leaving." And she walked out. He figured she went out to smoke, but he decided that was a good time for him to just leave, and he went back to the hotel.
Yeah, that sounds appropriate.
Yeah.
You have an argument with your girlfriend, and you're like, you know what? it's time for me to go.
Yeah, she's going to go smoke.
She's visiting from out of town and has like no way around here, but I'm going to go.
Yeah. So he was asked, why didn't Emily take her phone with her? And Robert says that her phone was dead, so she just left it at the hotel because they were together and she didn't really need it. I mean, the hotel was walking distance.
Okay, I can buy that.
But, okay, you know she doesn't have her cell phone, but you're going to leave the hotel or the bar. Right. Not yeah, that's just, stupid. Yeah. He says
but guys are stupid like that. I mean...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They just don't think like women do.
Yeah. So he says he got to the hotel room and Emily wasn't there.
What? She wasn't there? You mean she didn't go straight back to the hotel? She stayed there, maybe thinking her boyfriend was going to be there?
Okay.
I don't know.
Yeah. So he says, I just paced around a little and then I just went into the room and I waited.
Okay. Sounds like a solid plan.
Mm-hmm. At this time, it was about 11:40 to midnight time frame. Detective Rennie, he asks him, so she left with some guy? And Robert says, I didn't see her leave with anyone, but she said she was leaving, so...
come on.
Detective Rennie asks, or he starts to get real with Robert.
Yeah.
He says, you just don't look like the kind of guy that just lets your girlfriend leave with some random guy.
Right.
He tells Robert, out of all the witnesses there, no one saw her leave with someone else. And Robert says, let me ask you a question. I filed the missing person report. Why am I getting grilled so hard? Is everything okay?
I cannot.
Detective says, well, you were the last person to see her alive. Does that answer your question?
What? So he thought, okay, I get a pass because I filed the missing person report.
Yeah. He's thinking, oh, I'm going to look like
I love this detective. Does that answer your question?
So Robert just hangs his head and he shakes his head in understanding. So detective gets up and he walks out. And when he comes back, he basically asks, is it possible that someone saw y'all arguing? And Robert says he was trying to keep their argument as discreet as possible.
Uh-huh.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, in fact, a witness did come forward and said that he did witness them arguing. And Robert was pointing his finger in Emily's face.
Discreet.
And he was being very forceful with her.
I believe this.
At this point, Robert started, he starts pleading his case. I'm not a violent person. And he says, I don't get in fights and my friends will tell you I'm a good guy. However, Robert's ex-wife and his ex-girlfriend, ooh, yeah, they had something different to say.
I think they did.
They both said that he had a violent nature.
Mm.
On March 4th, Robert came in. He had agreed to a polygraph. He was asked basically the same question a few different ways. You know, do you know where Emily is kind of questions? Mm-hmm. Right at the end, the test was barely over and they're like, well, you failed.
The ink's not even dry, but yeah, we can tell you.
Jeez. He throws his head back. How? And he's like, well, let's take it again. I want to take it again. And yeah, that doesn't.
Yeah, no.
Doesn't work like that.
I've got a prior engagement. Mm-hmm. Gotta go.
So detectives question him again. Do you know where she's at? They knew he was lying.
Yeah.
Robert says, all right, look. When I realized she left, I went driving around to see if I could find her. And I never did. All right, we're on to story number two.
Wow, that's profound. Thank you for that additional piece of information.
Why are you just now telling?
What?
And
also, so?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, this is nothing earth-shattering. Like, this is stupid.
Yeah. He says, but I know she had to have gotten into a white extended cab truck.
What?
Yeah.
Okay. Now we're talking. Yeah. What?
Nobody saw this happen. This was not on cameras. So the detectives, they know, okay, he's close to cracking.
Yeah.
We got to keep going. Detective Rennie tells him either an accident happened or I'm dealing with a monster here. And he's like, I'm not a monster. And Detective Rennie says, well, convince me of that.
So he's speaking to his pathology now mm-hmm. and his ego.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So the fragile shell does start to crack a little more. Now Robert has another version of what happened. He says he saw Emily get into the vehicle with someone else. So he followed them. Now he did see where they were going.
Why didn't he just say that in the first place when they asked if she left with someone else?
I don't know.
Okay. Anyway, he sees them. He follows them.
Yeah, he's following.
What else?
So he follows them and he pulls into a driveway of a house or something.
Okay.
He got out of the car to confront them and the guy gets out of his truck and he comes at him with a pipe.
Right.
But Emily jumped in front of him and the guy ended up whacking Emily in the head.
Oh, no.
He says, the guy was still coming after me. So I ran, I got in my truck and I left.
Wow. What a harrowing tale.
Mm-hmm. Detective Rennie asks him, was Emily bleeding? And he says, well, it looked like there was blood. No. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Nonchalant. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Looked like there was. Mm-hmm. This is your girlfriend, yeah. Man.
He sounds really tore up about this.
So Robert agreed to show them where the house was, where he had this altercation. It was about 3 miles from the highway, and they pulled up to this old, run-down, abandoned house. They parked at the start of the driveway and told Robert to stay in the vehicle. And I'm telling you, these detectives... You want them on your case.
Yeah.
They had the expertise and the wherewithal to know that they should not drive in the dirt driveway.
Is brill. Totally brill.
Yeah, because they did not want to ruin any evidence of tire tracks or footprints. Mm-hmm. So they start walking and lo and behold, there were tire tracks.
Mm-hmm.
Lieutenant Blackman followed the tracks around to the back of an old worn down barn. At the end of those tracks in the grass lay Emily's lifeless body.
Oh my gosh. I was not expecting that.
Yeah.
At all.
I know. He knew it was her by her tattoos and that he had heard about or saw pictures of. She was only wearing a bra and was lying face down.
Oh my gosh.
Detective Rennie walks back to the truck and tells Robert, we found Emily and she's deceased. And he says, really?
What?
And gave no emotion as he stood there smoking a cigarette. Yeah. Really? You found her? Huh. So once back at the station, Detective Sanchez steps in to try to close the case, close the confession, you know. Mm-hmm. Detective Rennie's like, they told him, look, you take a break. It was personal to him.
Yeah.
And so Detective Sanchez goes in there and his tactic was to build a rapport and mm-hmm. show understanding to Robert. He's like, I know how these things can happen. I'm not married for a reason, you know, because mm-hmm. relationships can be hard.
Yeah, women be crazy.
So Robert, he kind of softens up. He's like, oh, okay, he understands.
Mm-hmm.
He sits with his head down and he asks, am I ever going to see my daughter again?
Mm.
He says, I really need a cigarette. And after that, I'll tell you everything. So Detective Sanchez, he agrees. He sneaks a recorder into his pocket as they go outside.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like behind him trying to tuck it in, make sure it's turned on, mm-hmm. the play button's going. And so he gets outside. He didn't want to take the risk of Robert confessing outside and then changing his story back in interrogation room. So they get outside. Robert lights up the cigarette. He takes a puff. And this is when the shell breaks. Mm. He says, I kicked her in the face with my steel-toed boot. And he says, you kicked her in the face? He says, yeah, I thought it knocked her out. He says they were arguing about the guy at the bar that said he wanted to take her home. So everything that he said that happened at the bar seemed to be true. Mm-hmm. Now he says when Emily left the bar, she did go to the room. When he got to the room, she was packing up her things. She told him that she was leaving and they were done. And she was trying to leave and drive home and he was trying to stop her.
Was this before he kicked her in the face?
This was before when he got after to the room. Argument. Yeah. So she's trying to pack up her stuff. She says she's leaving. So this is after he's being forceful with her at the bar. Mm-hmm. So she's like, no, I'm not putting up with that. Mm-hmm. I'm leaving. Of course she was drunk too. So we know alcohol kind of heightens your emotions. Mm-hmm. So he's trying to stop her. He's like, you can't drive. This is his story. You can't drive. You're drunk. Like,
I care about you.
Yeah.
You can't drive.
So, yeah. I care about you so much. I'm going to kick you in the face. Yeah. Well, so that's when he gets physical with her. She bit him.
Oh.
And he punched the wall and then he kicked her. When he saw that she was still moving, he kicked her in the face again. He said she was knocked out and breathing funny. His solution was to put her in his car and drive her to the abandoned house. When they got to the house, she started waking up. He grabbed an air pump that was in his truck and he whacked her with it.
This is spiraling out of control.
Yeah. This did not need to happen.
No.
At any point, you could have stopped.
Right.
He hit her with it a couple times in the head. Then he wrapped a rope around her neck and closed the passenger door on the other end of the rope. He got into the driver's seat and proceeded to drive and drag her body about 150 yards to the area behind the barn where she was found. So Robert was arrested and charged with a few different charges, including kidnapping with the intent to kill. He pleaded not guilty to first degree murder and the other charges. In court, a voicemail was played for the jury. During the altercation, Robert had put his phone in his pocket and apparently butt-dialed Emily's number, and it left a recording on her voicemail.
Oh my gosh.
It was Emily crying and telling Robert, never again get away from me.
Oh, that's chilling.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my.
After a three-week trial at the Eddy County Courthouse, the jury of 5 men and 7 women deliberated only a few hours. They declared unanimously that Robert Early was guilty of first-degree murder.
Thank God.
He was also guilty of kidnapping and tampering with evidence.
Slap him with the charges.
Yes, ma'am. In New Mexico, the only possible sentence for a defendant who is found guilty of first-degree murder with an aggravated circumstance is life imprisonment.
Good.
So that's what he received.
Bye.
Robert's defense attorney, Deborah Lautenschlager.
Okay, let's hear it.
She said that the defense does intend to file an appeal.
Mm-hmm.
She respects the jury's decision.
Right, yes.
But they do intend to file an appeal on the verdict, adding that Robert was sorry for his actions and the death of Emily.
Oh, okay. That makes it all better, actually.
I'm sure he was sorry.
Thanks
he
for
was
saying that.
He was going to jail. So Robert even made a statement saying, the guilt and pain I've had since that night has been a living nightmare.
Good.
He asked for forgiveness from Emily's family, but he said he doesn't expect that they would forgive him and he would change places with her if he could.
I don't think so.
In 2016, an appeal was made and determined that Robert will remain in prison.
Good.
So yeah, there's that. All of the detectives do stay in contact with Emily's family. Emily's two daughters are now in their teenage years and playing softball like their mom. They both wear number 23 to honor her.
I love that.
Yeah. So I know I talked a lot about Robert and his confession. So I'm going to bring it back to Emily and just I'll read you what her obituary says.
Okay.
Emily was a dynamic woman of intense passion who wanted to be everyone's friend and fix any problems they may have. She loved her children and her teaching position, both of which she worked hard to achieve. Emily enjoyed contemporary music, being with friends and family, traveling, pool, and skiing. Her infectious, sometimes impish smile and enervating spirit lit up any room she entered. Emily was always involved with family, friends, and anyone who needed help in solving a difficult problem or situation. If you met her, you were her friend, and you know she truly cared about you. Her shell is empty, but her spirit is here with everyone she knew and loved. We will all remember Emily. She was preceded in death by her brother, Daniel B. Koenig. And her brother actually died in a car wreck just a couple of years before her murder.
Oh my goodness.
I know. And so one of the heart-wrenching things her dad said whenever he found out that she was murdered, he looked at to Emily's mom and said, "We're alone now."
I just have no idea.
No. And so that's what I'm at the beginning of this episode when I talked about the evil that we talk about, like so much evil to take away something so precious from a family.
Have some self-control. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
Are you that immature? Like, I have some things to say about him, but I don't want to because I think you ended it beautifully. And it just really sucks that someone thought, you know what? I'm in charge here and I get to end her story.
Right.
Her story ends here with me.
Right.
That's not fair.
No, it's
not. So screw you. And lest you drop the soap in prison. that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
But this was great. Let's do it again sometime.
We will in a few weeks.
Yeah, we'll see you in a few weeks, guys.
Bye, y'all.
Bye. Love you. Bye.
Thank you for listening to Cousins on Crime. If you're enjoying our podcast, please consider leaving us a positive review and rating. To make sure you never miss an episode, subscribe to our show.
You can also follow us on Instagram at Cousins on Crime Podcast or send case suggestions to cousinsoncrime@gmail.com.